What's up, everybody? I am Kenzie.
I'm AT, and this is Sippin'.
This ain't a Sippin' C.
But come sip and see.
Change perspectives. You sound better. Spirits are shown.
Get into it. We're not into it.
Our words,
I am.
Our action.
I am sipping a Gen Z millennial vibe.
We gonna get into it.
Yes.
Here we are. We just need to go ahead and get this thing going.
I am. Mm-hmm.
Alan, what are you sipping on?
Today I am sipping on some Stella Rosa watermelon wine.
Stella Rosa watermelon wine.
Yes, it's sweet.
Wow.
It's giving summer even though it's fall.
Okay. Oh, wow, you're going to change it up. Well, today I am just drinking water. I felt like it was important for me to purify this weekend. So I just had me some good cold water with just a splash of lemon.
Today we have a very special guest.
He's a wonderful counselor, mighty God, Prince of Peace. He's a wonderful counselor, mighty God, Prince of Peace. When you're down and out and you need someone to talk to, he's a wonderful counselor. Yes, he is. Yeah. He's a wonderful counselor. Yes, he is.
Hallelujah. Glory to God.
You got him. Miss Angela Burchett, can you go ahead and tell us what you are sipping today?
I am having some Tropical Punch protein water.
Ooh.
Tropical Punch protein water.
Yes. It's something a new discovery I made because I'm big on getting my protein in. So, You know, when you get tired of drinking protein shakes, you can have a water. And they have, so far I found them in Tropical Punch and grape.
Wow. No. How much protein is in it?
20 grams. And the bottle is about 17 ounces.
Now, the real question is, how does it taste?
It's so good.
Okay.
Honest to goodness. I wouldn't drink it every day, but it'll get you through.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. No, but you said something about some sangria earlier, so I know every day.
Now, why are you going to have to put me out there like that?
It's Sunday. They don't know if it was communion or not, or you can pretend like it was.
Well, listen, this is first Sunday, and communion happened at church today.
Come on, listen. So you are owed that sangria.
Yes.
You are very excited to introduce a good friend of mine, Miss Angela Burchett, who is a Broadway actress, but you all probably know her as Jackie Clark Chisholm in the Clark Sisters First Ladies of Gospel. Hello, Angela.
Hey.
You ready to get into it?
Let's get all the way into it. I'm ready.
Okay, good, because you know we be sipping on sipping.
Oh, yes.
Okay, Angela, I don't know if you remember this. I remember it vividly. We met in Chicago on the national tour of The Color Purple. I think it was a 2017.
You were on the tour?
I was not on the tour.
Okay.
I got to witness Angela's amazing performance on the tour in Chicago.
Okay, good.
And we met after the show. And I remember telling you I knew Kenzie, and we took a picture, and I just remember you're such a sweet, sweet person, and your spirit is so joyful and generous and kind. I just want to say thank you for that.
Oh, you're so welcome. I remember us talking. I remember. You're so sweet, too.
Thank you.
But you were just so chill and kind. It was a pleasure to chat and talk with you.
Thank
you.
Okay, so what Alan is not saying is that he is absolutely obsessed with The Color Purple. When I first met Alan, you know, and I have lots of challenges with that particular show, but he loved it, and he did not care that I didn't. Alan, what is it about the show that you love so much? And, and maybe Angela can come in and talk about those things and how it relates, you know, with her and her experience being on the Broadway stage in the show, but also the national tour.
So I think, I first actually saw the Broadway production in 2015. And immediately I fell in love with just the story of a Black woman experiencing so much trauma, but also coming to triumph toward the end of the show. And it was so inspiring also just to see the levels of Black women's kinship and the way Black women interact with one another and uplift one another. That was just so paramount for me watching that show. And I saw it with my mom, and you know, sitting there next to her and watching another Black woman go through all of this and you know, pull herself, and you know, of course, have the help of others pull her through that. It was just, it made me actually understand my mother even that much more, because she has experiences that she's told me about, and you know, seeing it on stage like that put it all into perspective for me. And just the spiritual, the heart of that show, I can feel the Spirit of God moving through the lyrics, through the musical composition, and the way that the show was staged, the way it was musically directed by Jason Michael Webb. Yeah. That was just outstanding to me. It's probably my favorite show that I've seen.
Alan's talking, you know, about womanhood, you know, I guess coupled with Blackness in the show. So can you talk about your journey with the show as a Black woman?
Well, my journey with the show was just probably from start to finish magical for so many reasons. You know, I've been in New York 15 years. It'll be 15 years in January. And, you know, a lot of shows that seemingly were like perfect for me always seemed to elude me, including this show. When they first were auditioning, you know, in the beginning, they weren't even seeing people that didn't have certain things on their resume, or, you know, that John was not, you know, interested in seeing, which, you know, kind of, when I heard that, kind of put a little bad taste in my mouth. But I said, you know, people will probably leave the show, or, you know, things will change. And if it comes up again for me, it's cool. But I was also at a place in my life where I had been at this for 10 years. And I said, you know, if this year, which was 2016, if things don't kind of, you know, go in a certain direction, I'm really going to start looking at other things. I enjoy other things. I do live music. I'm a studio session singer. You know, do all types of things. So I was kind of at that point that, like, people, I guess, kind of come to where they say, you know, I'm this age. I've put so much into this. I feel like I'm doing everything right. I'm doing my work, and it's just not happening. So maybe it could be I'm barking up the wrong tree or something like that. Mm-hmm. And in a matter of months, like maybe 2 months of me kind of internally stating to myself, the show, it didn't, I don't want to say it dropped in my lap, but it was really mine to lose, honestly, in hindsight. You know, they kind of went to the cast and said, hey, guys, we need a female swing to cover pretty much everyone except, you know, Celie, the principals. We need an ensemble girl that can cover all of these things. Do you guys know anybody? Because we got to kind of move fast. We've got to start giving y'all vacation, and we don't really have time to do a long blah, blah, blah. So from what I'm told, before they could get the sentence out, everybody in the cast that knew me, which was about 80, 90% of the cast, said, Angela Burchett, you have to call her. Like, she's the perfect person for this. And I feel a little knot in my chest. I do. I'm not gonna lie. I apologize if I get a little choked up.
It's because okay.
just it to go from, I was doing bands and I was, you know, making a lot of money actually. So my life wasn't horrible, but it wasn't what I came here for. And I kept trying to figure out, you know, why am I chasing this thing that seems like it's not for me? It doesn't want me, you know. But, you know, the years leading up to it, I started, you know, hosting a residency that became really popular. So people like Jason Michael Webb and his partner Leland Thompson and Savion Glover and all these folks would come and enjoy the show and kind of got to know me for real, not just when I walk in the room for 16 bars. So when my name started getting thrown around, they all were like, oh, yeah, definitely. But of course, you know, John Doyle had to be the you know, the gatekeeper for that. Right. So
John Doyle is the director.
Yes, John Doyle, who you know, is a very prominent Broadway director and is known for taking shows and kind of flipping them, reworking them, reimagining them. You know, they called my rep and said, hey, we want to bring her in. This is going to be Fast and Furious. It was the week before Tony's, the Tony Awards. So I would know that week if I booked it and would be starting rehearsals like the next Tuesday after that. Wow. I'm on a short list of women who I have admired, who I have watched in performance and have been so moved, or they're friends of mine that I'm thinking, you know, wow, I don't have any Broadway credits. I'm the girl everybody in here knows, but I don't have what they have. I kind of had to really dig down in myself. It was the old Telsey building, and I had to go back downstairs because I literally felt myself hyperventilating because I had coached and I had worked and I knew this stuff. I was dressed right. You know, and Jason's partner was my coach, who already was my coach, and not because of this. He had already been coaching me on things. And he said, honey, you just have to go in there and be honest. Be you. Don't be anything else. And I went in there and I did, you know, they brought me in and I did the stuff and I walked out. They didn't say anything. I'm going in the bathroom, putting my clothes back on. And I'm, you know, of course, my heart's in my stomach. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, oh, well, here's just another letdown. Long story short, the day was going to go like this. They saw maybe 20, 25 girls. They were going to cut it down to 2, come back at 5. John's going to be in the room, and he's going to decide tonight. Mm-hmm. So it's down to me and another young lady who is a friend of mine who is a fierce actress, fierce singer, could absolutely do the job. Mm-hmm. Still, I'm thinking.
Were you all in front of each other? Like, was she there as well?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah, okay. They called all of us in at one time. It was like a 2 o'clock call. All the women are there. We're all in the lobby. Everybody's looking at everybody. You know the drill. And then everybody gets cut except she and I. They all leave. And she goes and, you know, does whatever she does. I sit there and I just gather myself, my ass, all of it. And 5 o'clock rolls around. John Doyle walks in, goes in the room, and I go first. Did it. And for big auditions, I always have a picture of my twin nieces. They're my goddaughters, but they call me auntie. And we're not blood related, but I'm literally like their other mom. They have pulled me through some really tough times just by them their presence demanding my presence to show up. And so I had their picture in my pocket and I just touched it and I said, okay, this is it. And I went in, I did the material, and John, I felt like a warmth kind of come over the room. And John, they told me, if John starts asking you stuff about you personally, that's a good sign. So he starts asking me about where I went to college and my parents and all these things and, you know, all the things. And that was that. He gave me maybe one adjustment, did it, and that was that. And when I walked in the room, he said, oh, you're dressed like Sophia, which was not on purpose. I hadn't even seen the show yet, so I didn't even know what Sophia wears, but it was lined up. Long story short, I'm at Leland's house the next day coaching for a television rehearsal, audition actually. And I take a break to go to the bathroom. My agent calls me and tells me that I booked it. Mm. I think I broke the garbage can in their bathroom. And when I opened the door, Jason is at the door with tears running down his face. Mm. And he said, babe, you were fantastic. You were fantastic. You are exactly, your energy and your spirit is what our show needs. I knew it. Maddie knew it. We just had to, John knew it, but we had to, we had to go through the motions really, but you earned that. We didn't give that to you. So welcome. And I came to the theater and the first person I ran into on an off day, because this was like a Monday, I opened the door. Cynthia just happens to be at the theater. And she said, oh, my love, welcome. We're so happy to have you. I'm so excited you're here with my terrible British accent.
I was just about to say, girl, that's the coaching you need to go get.
It's horrible. Sometimes it just has to be the right thing at the right time, and you have to be in the right place. Over the years of working with the show and going on tour and really getting a chance to work directly with John, you know, here and there, I found ways to reconcile some things, some issues that I have with the show. In terms of, you know, how we are positioned and how we express ourselves musically.
Well, this is the perfect time for me to say that is my challenge with The Color Purple, in that I do think, and I did not see the second production of The Color Purple. I didn't see the John Doerr. I saw the original one. And it is because of the reasons that you just said, that you have folk who don't know the culture. You know, in our P-Valley episode, we talk about, you know, the importance of being specific in playing Black, but also Black South. Like, it is a very specific thing. And I can see that tension on most Broadway stages that are directed or choreographed by non-Black people when the story is rooted in Blackness. And that tension for me is always present, you know? And so stripping the show down to make it bare and minimal, to me, does not change the book. It doesn't change the music, you know? And even with a Black person, you know, being musical director, and as sweet and as generous as both he and Leland are, believe it or not, this year at midnight, when I'm not going to say my age, when I turned my age, I was at their home in LA, which is really interesting. Can you talk about, you know, the impact of this British director and also the impact of, you know, Cynthia Erivo, British Black woman, playing this Southern woman and also receiving, maybe not with this play, but definitely for Harriet, receiving a lot of backlash from the Black public, American Black public. Can you just talk about that? Not, you know, her story, because you're not her, but just the British influence on this production.
Yeah. Well, I found it very interesting as I, particularly when I was working on the Broadway production and, you know, we changed, what well, at my time there, we changed principal cast members a couple of times. So we had a lot of opportunity to kind of go back to basics and look at things because they wanted to kind of build the new person into the show, but bring, you know, who they were to it, blah, 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 and just kind of freshen the show up. And so one of the things that struck me as interesting was that British directing and the approach to acting that they find difficult to contend with American actors is this sense of American actors are too sentimental. They feel too much.
What does that mean?
Yeah. There's a note on feeling emotional that we see in acting that you just don't see in British acting, according to John. I wasn't super excited about kind of how we did group numbers because there was this influence of kind of keep the lid on it. Let's not get too moved. Let's not get too worked up. And I don't know if that was to create such a difference from the original production or in conjunction with this whole notion that American actors, Black, white, or otherwise, get too sentimental, whatever he truly meant by that.
You know, that's crazy to me. And it's making me want to move on because it's making me mad. But, you know, because, I mean, that is so un-Black. You know what I'm saying? Like, we are emotional. We are, you know, and especially American Black, you know, because of our experience. Look at the political climate right now. So, like, for me, the show has failed, and I'm glad I didn't see it.
Well, may I interject also, of course. Though, yeah. That I think a lot of it, and when I say I think, it's my interpretation of his, you know, several moments in rehearsals and note sessions where he's explaining a lot of things and he's giving, you know, his backstory or his, not backstory, but like his support for why he is making this choice or sending us in this direction, mm-hmm. is that he feels that in, he would say, quote unquote, other productions, which we know you mean the original, that a lot of the book got lost because of this notion of everything has to be hype.
But see, that's my whole point, that just by stripping and making the stage bare, he feels like he got closer to the book because his focus is language. Mm-hmm. But he doesn't understand that there is a heart that happens that is exposed and that is going to come out automatically, mm-hmm. innately, you know, in this particular show that is about so much gut-wrenching emotion.
Yeah.
You know, so that's just crazy to me.
Now, Angela, you have a history of your shows being around Black women's kinship, including Dreamgirls, and of course, The Color Purple, and most recently, the Clark Sisters movie.
Yeah.
So, first of all, yes. Can you just tell us a little bit about how that process was of first getting into the movie, but also the rehearsal process and preparing for that role, and even your relationship with Jackie?
So I was still on tour. We were getting ready to finish up. And my good friend, Michael Chin, who is an exec over at Lifetime, who I met at Lights Out. This is just another case of things all aligning, because before that, I didn't know him.
He was still working for
Alvin Ailey.
Mm-hmm. Alvin Ailey, yep. Right? He was their tour manager, yep. company manager.
Yep. And he, mm-hmm. a friend had brought him to Lights Out for his birthday and said, you got to hear this girl. We're going to have such a good time. And he just he's one of those people that has this thing about him that clicked with me, and we literally like stayed friends since then. So word came down the pike over at Lifetime that there was talks that this was a strong possibility that this was going to be in their whatever season. So he called me and he said, hey, I just want to put a bug in your ear that this is happening and you need to get up in there. So soon as, you know, they're ready to start casting, I'll make sure that, you know, I can't like do anything extra, but I will definitely make sure I push your name up there so that when it's time to send out stuff to go on tape, you're in there. And that's what happened. Long story short, they had me read for three sisters, actually. The first sister I read for was Twinkie. And then I didn't read for any more for a long time. So once again, I thought, oh, well, okay, I guess I'm out, you know, but word was coming back, you know, because I kind of had the inside track, that they loved me. They were like, man, who is this girl? Twinkie Bird was casting, you know, everybody knows Twinkie. She's been around for years and years and years. And she's also good friends with Michael and said, yo, who is this girl? Like, why is this the first time I've seen her? This is ridiculous. Like, where is she? Why is she in New York? Oh, she's a theater girl. Well, she needs to get her ass to LA. Like, she's beautiful. She did wonderful with the material. She can sing. The camera, I mean, she was just going off. And I'm like, whoa. Like, I was not expecting that feedback. And normally you wouldn't get that.
Twinkie Bird, who is a casting director. So Twinkie Clark did not cast the movie, but it was Twinkie Bird. And Twinkie Bird has cast lots of movies like Stomp the Yard, Notorious, Jumping the Broom, Woman Thou Art Lost, Fruitvale Station, so, and Black Nativity. I auditioned for that movie. She ain't put me in it, but she put me in the next one.
Yes, man. Big shout out to Tracy. Her name is Tracy. Tracy, right. Bird. Big shout out to her, because she really was and still is. Like, I can give her a call and, you know, she's always like, are you doing this? Are you doing that? You got to do this. No, we got, you know, we black women, so we got to do this.
Do you know what's crazy is that I was working at the Brooklyn Museum and she came up, and I guess because she is very nice. Uh-huh. She's a very nice woman. She came up. And I guess we got to talking, and I guess I mentioned that I was an actor, and she was like, oh, you don't know who I am? She said, Google me, and walked away. Ooh. And guess what I did?
You Googled her.
I went and Googled her, and my face fell to the floor.
But yeah, so ultimately, they sent me more sides, and when it came down, and Jackie was the very last one I got. And as soon as I got the material, I was like, yep, this is the one. This is the one. Mm. This is the one. And just for me knowing, I mean, I've always been obsessed with the Clark sisters. I have two sisters. We sang all of their stuff growing up in the 90s, late 80s, 90s. We're from the same town. I didn't grow up Cozy, but I grew up Apostolic, which is basically the same thing.
Basically the same. Y'all was running praise laps.
That's right. And speaking in tongues.
And carrying in the room.
Oh, yeah. Tearing. You don't get up till them tongues come.
You see them tongues come. Right.
And the missionary tell you, oh, no, honey, that's not tongues. That's stammering lips. Come back next Sunday. You ain't got it. You don't got it. That's not it. That's just you're tired. Your tongue is stammering. Come back next week. So it just, once again, just like The Color Purple, it kind of all came together, just everything aligned, and called me. They made me the offer. I flipped out. I couldn't believe it. I was so excited. And just around the time that they told me I had booked it was Christmas time, and I go home every Christmas. So I said, hey, so I need to get a meeting with Jackie. I want to sit down and talk to her. I need to talk to her outside of her performing or stuff on YouTube. I want to watch her. I want to see her mannerisms. I want to really see what she'll share. Mm-hmm. And what I thought was going to turn into like, it'd be a 30-minute talk or something, because it was like right after Christmas, like the day after Christmas or something like that, turned into literally like a 4-hour cackling session. She is the auntie that you love and you just want to be around. She told the truth. Ooh, that woman tells the truth, and she don't care, because her motto is, my truth is my truth. Karen got her truth. Dorinda got her truth. Twinkie got hers. And Denise got hers. And I got mine. And if you don't like your part in it, I don't know what to tell you. I'm so sorry. Mm. And that's probably why we saw a lot of Jackie in the story, because Jackie was really very vocal. She was not afraid. She told me stuff that I'm thinking, now, lady, you don't know me from Adam's house cat. You probably shouldn't be telling me this. But she said, no, I want you to, because I don't know. She didn't know what was going to be in the story, because the script was still being rewritten and revised. She said, but I want you to have as much as you can have so you can tell this thing honestly. Because, you know, we know that Jackie is the one that everybody is like, oh, Jackie don't sound like them. She can't really sing like them. You know, she went through a lot. And what people finally learned, I hope they learned through the film, is that even though, no, she wasn't leading all the songs on the albums, and she wasn't Karen or Dorinda or Twinkie, she was the anchor. She was the reason why, once Maddie left the scene, business deals wasn't falling through. And they was getting, you know, no, you're not about to pay us $10,000. You about to pay us this. And not one note gonna get sang till I see the check. And that's what and I'm a big sister. I'm the oldest of three girls. So I understood, and we from the same town. Our cadence is the same. She's loud like me. She say crazy stuff, and she's funny. And I said, Auntie Jackie, this is going to be an honor to play you, and I'm so excited, and thank you for just being open and honest with me. And throughout the process, she was, any questions you have, you know, please feel free to call me day or night. When they came to set to shoot, we had a good old time, and it was just funny kind of them seeing us dressed like them back in the early 2000s, and, you know, and then meeting Anjanou Ellis. And I've probably never seen anything more touching in my life than to see three grown women break down into a mess for 20 minutes, because their mother, to them, their mother walked in that room, because Anjanou Ellis straight bodied every moment of that movie that she was in.
I told you the movie was about 20 minutes too long and it should have been over when she died. That's when the movie should have just been, and it should have probably been called the Maddie Moss Clark story.
Right. I don't disagree with any of that.
Anjanou Ellis is a favorite of ours over mm-hmm. here. So can you talk more about just what was it like being around her, even talk about her process maybe that you yeah. saw? Did she say she went off in a closet and had to scream sometimes yeah. to get her voice
yeah,
out?
I had her on back in the summer. I did, I was trying to do a little series, but she was the only one I nailed down. But I was, you know, I wanted to, you know, if I'm going to be on Instagram talking and I wanted to talk about something and not just be sitting there hearing the same questions everybody's heard us ask or answer. So what I wanted to bring, mm-hmm. what I brought her on about was, I just called it An Actor Prepares. And we wanted to talk about process. And like a lot of people don't really know or are privy to see actors, particularly of her caliber, what they go through to prepare for a role. So both there and just in our own little emails and little chats when I ask her stuff, she just shares with me how, you know, a lot of people think, you know, because I do this, that, you know, things just come when they see the final product, that they think it just came out that way. She said, you know, this movie really challenged me. There were moments when I kind of wanted to give up on myself a little bit because I felt like I just wasn't nailing it. And in my mind, I'm thinking, lady, what? But then she explained, she used the example of, you know, already she's not a singer. Like, she'll tell you that I'm not a singer. I can get by, but I'm not a singer. I'm an actor. And all of them pretty much, and particularly Dr. Maddie, had this particular sound when they spoke, when they sang. And she was struggling with the fact that she couldn't seem to get that part of her physicality for the role. So one day we were shooting, it was the scene when we're talking about Twinkie comes in to tell us that she sold her catalog, and Maddie's explaining to us what happened, and she's like, loses it with her. And so we had to kind of keep stopping that, and Anjanou would walk off, and we were filming in this tiny little house, and we were in the kitchen of the house, so there wasn't really...
Where were y'all?
We were in Toronto. In the dead of winter, so it was freezing cold in the house, outside of the house, snow everywhere. It was crazy. I feel like I was in boot camp or something, but we're literally in the close-ups. We're all in like UGG boots or whatever, thermal boots, because the house was so cold that anytime we weren't in a full shot, we needed them because our feet were like numb. But we're standing there like we're just sitting around a table eating breakfast. It was so crazy, but she would leave and go into like a closet somewhere, and we would hear her like scream, and I'm thinking... Then I was thinking, oh, this lady is crazy. Why is she screaming? Like somebody is, like it sounded like an argument. Like somebody's arguing and they just decided to scream at the person. That's what it sounded like. And she would come back in and we'd do it again. And she would just, she'd stop and be like, no, you know. And so now down the road, as we're talking about it, she was saying, I was doing that. Not a great choice on my part. But I was doing that because I was trying to like make myself hoarse. I was trying to like create, manufacture this raspiness, and it just wasn't happening. But the brilliant thing that she said to me was, that's when you're training as an actor and your instincts as an actor kick in. Transfer the power that you think is in the sound of her voice into her choices, into her presence. And that's exactly what she did.
Thank you for sharing my little video that I made interviewing her. You said her comments back to me were for me, but she's so generous and nice. And I thank you for sharing
that. Oh, yeah, absolutely.
I want to tell her to put me in something. Thank you very much. Obviously, the movie was about singing, so we have to talk about, you know, you and music, and you mentioned your sisters. I remember many years ago, you introduced me to your sisters, and we were sitting, I think we were at a restaurant, and y'all sang, I think it was the Star Spangled Banner.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I, like, wanted to just throw the ketchup across the room, first of all, and then y'all, like, sang it. Y'all had no rehearsal. y'all, you know, y'all sang it very soft and sweet, and that harmony was so, it was amazing. So, you know, let's talk about your journey in music.
Oh, yeah. Well, you know, it's so funny how much my life parallels people lives like the Clark sisters. You right. know, my Maddie Moss Clark was Anthony Jerome Burchett.
Come on.
Still is. He's still my...
God, you love your
oh,
daddy.
Dear Lord Jesus, I love that man. He gets on my entire nerves. But I love him so because he is my biggest cheerleader. He is the person, not the only person, but, you know, a huge person, excuse me, in my life who will just not allow me to do less, be less. Mm-hmm. He's like, no. Since I laid eyes on you, I knew that you had something special. So don't you let nothing in you or outside of you get in the way of that. I don't care.
But your father is a musician too,
yeah, my
right?
Yeah, my dad was in like guy groups, like Temptation-esque type groups. Because my dad was a teenager, early 20s back during like when the Temptations and the Supremes were big time in Detroit. And he actually was in a group called the Compliments that used to open up for the Temptations. So wow. He tells me stories all the time of hanging out with David Ruffin in his house, and him and Melvin were really cool. And like, he went to school with Diana. They went to this. No, not Diana. Wow. He went to school.
Your daddy was getting lit with David?
No, he wasn't, because my dad, my grandma ain't played it. So he...
She didn't play that, okay.
Nah, he got a little wild later, but back then, no. Now, he was up in the mix, but he wasn't...
Okay.
You know, most he did was the beer and the weed or whatever. He wasn't out there being right, you know. Right. But, you know, and he was a little bit younger than them, you know, kind of like, you just 21, 22, so you really shouldn't even be hanging with us, but, you know... Tony's cool. That was the thing. I thought Tony's cool. He could come hang. He could come kick it with us. But, you know, that was his.
That sounds like me.
Yeah, that was his thing. And my dad can sing. Like, I mean, they called him One Take Tony. Because my father would go in the studio and lay vocals down in one take. And they would be like, oh, we don't need no more takes. We got it. And so that's the kind of thing I grew up under. My father was a musician. He was a band leader for, oh my God, 20 years or so, 20, 30 years. So I watched him lead a band. I watched him rehearse musicians. I sat on the basement steps when his group in the 80s, the Federal Reserve, they were kind of like a 80s kind of R&B funk band. I used to sit there and watch them rehearse and watch the lead female vocalists. And, you know, and then when my sisters came along, you know, I was like the leader. I had to make sure, you know, we were learning our little songs. And my dad was like Joe Jackson. He was like, oh no.
Did he encourage you all to start a group? Because y'all had a group,
yes,
right?
Yes. And he wasn't very happy when I left to go to college. He felt like I broke up the group. Mm. But you know.
Really?
Yeah, that was kind of a traumatic thing we kind of had to work through.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
I never knew that. That's crazy.
Yeah. For a long time I didn't know this, but my sisters resented me because they were thinking, oh, we're going to be this group. And, you know, I just had a lot going on. I wanted to go to college. I don't know that I necessarily wanted to be in a group exclusively. You know, I wanted to get to explore that. And I grew up in the church, so I wasn't no exploring. I directed choirs. Mm-hmm. I sang with my sisters and I sang with girl groups in high school. So I didn't get a chance. I hadn't explored anything. And, you know, my parents were younger when they had us. They, you know, we don't come out with a manual. So, you know, looking back, he's like, ah, God, I made so many mistakes. But, you know, things worked out, thank God. But we had to work through that because, you know, they really kind of looked to me to keep be the glue for that. And I just kind of, they felt like I just kind of walked away. So, but we, you know, we still to this day, when we get together, we'll sing, we'll play around and sing stuff.
But they're still singing, right?
Well, they actually are a songwriting team. They do more of that than they do singing.
Okay.
Now they do sing. They are artists as well. They put out a couple of albums that are exquisite. I love them.
You've been doing these IG Live shows, and I know you talked about talking to Anjanou, but you've been doing music shows too, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I've done some fundraisers. Well, not fundraisers, more charity things. I've done a couple of Broadway sessions where they've done. I know one is a Joe Biden fundraiser. I did another Black Lives Matter one. But then me personally, I got with the fellas that, you know, do Lights Out with me. And we say, guys, we're gonna, you know, once we feel safe enough to be, you know, around each other, a couple of us, let's get together and let's just do what we do virtually. Mm-hmm. And it's growing. People, you know, I think people still, you know, aren't super aware that we do it, but people come and it's kind of like, it's not quite like Lights Out. It's kind of like watching us in a shed session to prepare for Lights Out. We do full performances, but you get us arguing and you get us stopping to fix a tempo or me fussing. I'm always fussing at Taraka and he's always arguing with me about something. Or we'll have a guest pianist that also sings and we'll let them feature and just enjoy each other as musicians. And it's really, really been a lifesaver for us during this pandemic because, you know, y'all know y'all artists, we part of the way we get through our lives is expression. And when that gets taken away, that's uncharted territory.
Well, drop your social media so folk know where to go listen to you.
Yes, we do the lives on my Facebook artist page, which is just my regular name, Angela Burchett. We do that on Mondays. Not every Monday. You just kind of got to check me out, follow me, like my artist page. And also on Instagram, I always post there. And that's the same thing, Angela Burchett. You can follow me there. I try to keep up to date with all the places I'm virtually appearing.
So, Angela, can you tell us a bit about how you're feeling about this We See You movement that has taken over the theater artist space?
Did you sign your name
I did sign my name. But, you know, actually, I just saw something in my email that really bothered me. And it made me feel like, you know what? We need our own. Because the reality is, waiting around for them to, like, you know, cower to our demands ain't gonna happen. I just got an email about some casting office or some voice teacher or something that is offering scholarships to train people of color to learn how to sing, really sing Christine from Phantom of the Opera. And I wanted to break my phone. My first thought was, what makes you think that we're sitting at home hoping someone out there will take the time to teach us old, us little darkies how to sing Christine from Phantom of the Opera? And we need a scholarship. It was specifically for BIPOC. This is specifically for BIPOC people. Like, we can't pay if we wanted to pay for this. Because
also, Phantom of the Opera is boring as shit. So nobody wants to go say nothing.
And even if you go through all of this and you get somebody to sound real great and be great, they're never hiring a Black Christine. So stop. Even if they were, I don't want to play her. I don't want to be in Phantom of the Opera. So this is what I'm saying. I really feel like we have got to shift our focus. We have got to stop asking these people to let us in. And we have to shut the door. Hey, bye-bye. Shut the door behind them. Let them go in their own door. Shut it. And we go over here and we do for us, by us, with us. And that's
I agree. I know theater folk. And I've not been on Broadway, but I know the Broadway community and I know how it works. And just like you were saying something different, Angela, but it's similar to what you just said. When it goes and opens up, you're going to shuffle at that audition. You're going to change when they say be Blacker, you're going to be Blacker. So stop it. You know, just like really stop. And the reason why I say that is because, so, you know, I tried to attend the little 3-day symposium that they had. And the first day was the day where you get to express your experiences with racism in the theater. I think I lasted for a good 10 minutes.
Oh, boy.
Because it opened up with, I don't remember his name, but the young man talking about doing this Black play and the Black playwright and how he, basically a situation happened, the playwright wasn't there. And I think somebody asked the question about, like, I mean, is the Black queer experience really like that? So I'm assuming that it was Daddy, and the play Daddy, and it was Jeremy O'Hara's play, which he is a whole other level of problematic. But basically, What I understood from that experience is that, because he basically talked about how, I guess, he felt attacked by the cast and director, and there was nobody there present to support him, and he felt, you know, this violence and terror. And I was just like, but part of that is you didn't have the language to advocate for yourself. Part of that is that you don't, because the thing is that there's a particular language that you have to do when you're dealing with white folk, you know, if I can be really frank. And a lot of folk don't understand it, you know, and they're afraid, I don't want to be the angry black person, I don't want to be do this and that. And like we talked about, Angela, in a private conversation, we talked about how, you know, the real situation is that they will fire you, they will blackball you, you know, and make it to where you can't even have opportunities. But my thing is that where is your integrity? Because I would never sit in a room of anybody letting them berate me, letting them demean my experience. And so for me, I had to turn it off because I was like, there's a bigger problem here that you don't know how to advocate for yourself. I was going to say he probably had a similar experience as Jeremy O'Harris and his daddy, but, and I mean the quotations, I mean daddy, not daddy, but, you know, you know, but like, you know, I think that the part of the reason is, I know part of the reason is that racism continues and persists is because we're afraid to advocate for ourselves. We're afraid to speak up, you know. And for me, I just couldn't participate any longer because I was just like, that's the conversation that needs to be had. Because you're not going to change these folk. Like, they're going to remain the same. You know, if you need to understand that that is just what it is. But you still have the space to advocate for yourself. I just probably would have shut the conversation down and say, we need to continue because you all don't know that you're being offensive and I don't have the time to teach you.
I have to add something to that. I feel like that on top of that fear, it's also, you know, artists, most of us are not extremely wealthy. And so these jobs are sources of income for people, sometimes on their last leg. And
well, this child was a Broadway actor. You know what I'm saying? This child was a Broadway actor, so I can't. I understand what you're saying on, like, you know, the ground level, but no.
You know, the other part of that, too, for me as a person in a different generation than you all, how
people are reading you or coming for you for keep saying that we in a different generation.
We are. It's a multi-generational show.
Now, wait, what is mine? Kenzie, are we in the same one?
I'm not going to put you out there like that.
Because see, I think I need people to see me at the same time they see my age, because I don't look the way my age.
You better tell it. You better tell it. And you light skinned too, and you lucky because you don't have that trauma that some light skinned folk have. Oh, God.
So my question to both of you really is, how do those of us who are like newly coming into this business, how do we deal with these situations and, you know, navigate these spaces where, you know, we may not have a name for ourselves yet or credits? And so, like, how do we, you know, deal with that?
Your first question, AT, I've thought about that, particularly like the kids who are also now being affected by the pandemic, who are just getting out of conservatory or just deciding to come to New York or LA or whatever. And I was thinking in my head, I don't even know what to tell y'all. Because it's more to it than exposing the lack of diversity and the lack of respect for Black people in the theater. It's juxtaposed with what's happening socially. So those things have all both been going on all the time, and one kind of exposed the other. So what's going to happen if we don't quell, you know, get the police killings under control, which we probably won't for a while? How does that affect white folks and how they deal with Black people in the theater when it comes to hiring and treatment and rehearsals? And honestly, I don't think they know, because also against all of that is they're losing millions of dollars So their whole situation is going to be different, yeah, because they're going to have to be trying to figure out how to juggle all these things at once.
So I think that the, what I would say, A.T., I didn't think about these, you know, kids coming out of conservatory. I don't know what I would have done, right, if I was coming out of ECM at this time. I don't know. I literally don't. And the thing is that they do usually, we did our showcase in March, and that's basically, ooh, when the pandemic started.
Wow.
So I don't know, mm-hmm, what I would have done. But what I would say to you is, first of all, create, write, create stuff. You know, we're doing this podcast together. You're working on your one-man show. Keep doing that. Keep writing. Keep creating. Because like Angela said at the beginning, we need to do it for ourselves. Secondly, yeah, is what I said before. Because the thing is that that's why I think this whole movement right now is foolish. And when I say that, I'm talking about the Black folk, you know, the participate, you know, because the thing is that racism is not going anywhere. And I have a long theory about it, but I'm going to give you the short. And it's because this country has not publicly apologized to Black people. And until this country, yeah, atones their greatest sin, racism is going to be pervasive. Mm-hmm. So trying, mm-hmm, to be like, stop, 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 you know, this begging foolishness, it is absurd. It's out of control. What I will say to you is that you simply have to find their language, which you already have, and advocate for yourself. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. You can respectfully say, I'm not going to have this conversation. You also got to use the words they use. You're being very violent. Mm-hmm. This is abusive. I don't feel safe. Yeah. Once you start using that language, they back the fuck off. Okay? And so I think that, you know, that is what has to happen. I think that there needs to be more collaborations. Folk need to write, because I'll also say my biggest problem with the We See You movement, I said what you need to be asking for is them to be allowing authentic Blackness to be portrayed on stage. That's what you need to be. Mm-hmm. That's what you need to be demanding. Come on. Okay? Because there, mm-hmm, are a few shows that I go to where I say, oh, I understand that experience. I've seen that experience. I really feel like the last show, I mean, I haven't been seeing a lot of shows lately just because I haven't been moved to, but the last show where I felt that was George C. Wolfe's iteration of Shuffle Along. Mm. I thought that, you know, it was just a beautiful Black history lesson. It really was. That show, too, was about 20 minutes too long. But you know, it was an amazing Black history lesson. And maybe before that, it was Fela. Oh, you know, so I'm saying
one of the best things on Broadway, I swear.
One of the best things on Broadway, you know, in this century, you know. And so I'm saying, like, you need to create more. You need to be writing. You need to collaborate more. That is what people need to do. And produce. We got to produce our own stuff. Mm-hmm. That is the longer story, yeah, I think.
Well, I think I was being pessimistic in that moment when you asked me that, 18. But I absolutely agree with Kinsey 100%. What you're probably or you're already doing, just keep doing what you're doing. Keep pushing the envelope.
I do think, and maybe this is wishful thinking, I generally don't live in optimism. I live in realism. But what I think is that this pandemic is going to create space for better actors, better writing, and better performances.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I think.
Yep.
And so I think that this is the perfect time for you as a young artist to get in the door. Because I think, mm-hmm, that you have the ability and you also have what it takes to create that kind of change.
Mm-hmm. I accept that. Thank you.
You're welcome, child.
Go forth, young man. Go forth.
I met Angela 18 years
ago. Oh, my gosh.
And,
wow.
We were doing a little-known play called Once on This, mm-hmm, Island.
It is.
And I said this to Angela privately, but I think it's important to say it publicly. I remember during that time, Angela was very self-conscious about her acting. She knew she could sing, but she was very self-conscious about her acting. And I don't remember what I said to her, but I said some things. And you know, Angela, I have to tell you, when I saw your performance as Jackie Clark Chisholm, I was so proud of you. I was so very proud of you. Any insecurities or challenges or, you know, doubts that you have about your acting capabilities, you really just need to turn that voice off and shut it down, because your performance was very good. It was a fine performance. Yes. And I'm just so happy for you, and I'm excited to see your journey.
Oh, I'm glad there's no video.
Are you crying? Yeah. Okay, I held mine in. I was about to tear up too, but I held it in.
Oh, well, Kinsey, that means so much to me. And you know that, you know, just being transparent, because that's the only way we're going to help each other is to be transparent. That was a really tough time for me, because it was a show that I loved. But I just felt like I didn't belong there. I was made to feel that way. And then I started to believe it. And I was crying, but there was something, the crying was a release, because I had taken it what you said and said, okay, you're gonna go home, you're gonna eat some lunch, you're gonna chill out, and you're gonna go back to rehearsal, and you're gonna fucking do it. And you're going to do it every day. And you're going to do your best every day. If you got to stay up and work on these steps in this room or work on your whatever you're going to do. I go back to that moment when I, you know, all these times in my career that I've been doubting myself, even in big moments, you know. And I'm like, no, Ange, don't do that. Like, you can do this. Like, you're not some random schmandom who is clueless. So I, from the bottom of my heart, I truly appreciate you saying that, and about the performance, it means so much, and I just love you.
I love you too, my dear. Y'all know, y'all, I be reading the people. You know, if it was whack, I would tell you.
Oh, I already know. You and would have gave me notes on what I could have done better.
I know I would have.
But you know what? I mean, it wasn't really nothing you could have did with that part, because it's the writing was terrible. But
In that other scene, I am unsure what you were trying to convey. My suggestion,
which goes to show your director is what were they doing? Why didn't they catch that? If I could catch that, why didn't they catch that?
Right. Right. You know me very well.
Oh, yes, I do.
Angela, I just want to say thank you so much for joining us today. It is a pleasure and an honor to have you on our show.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so much fun.
Kenzie, can you tell us what the next episode is about?
We're going to be recapping all of these debates that have transpired and why y'all need to go out and vote.
This ain't a sip and see.